Good morning, everyone. Welcome to our third RAND session. Before we start into the actual presentation, we wanted to give a little update to all of you who have been attending. We're very pleased with the evaluation reports that we have been receiving. So far, we're getting an 85% agree, strongly agree with the presentation, so we feel we're hitting our target. But your feedback is really, really critical to us. We do look at them. We do look at your comments. So we do ask that you continue to provide us with your feedback. It's not as if we do this every day, so your input is valuable. One of the things that we keep hearing a lot is that you would like the sessions to be more interactive. So we ask that you please ask questions. Don't be shy. Raise your hand. Interrupt the speakers. That's what we're here for. We know that the sessions have a tendency to be more didactic. But don't be shy to interrupt. We're going to have Amy and Brenda walk around today with microphones. Because of the presentation, the recording, we've been told that it would be best to go around with microphones. So that is it, I think, for updates. The surveys will now be online rather than paper. We're trying to save trees. So the link will be provided to you right after the session or shortly thereafter. As for today's presentation, it will be focusing on the life cycle of the RAN, of the life cycle of the CFI award. I'm sorry. We have three presenters. Nathalie Foisset, who's the Associate Director of Institutional and Strategic Initiatives Unit in the OSR. Romina Taran, who's the Senior Budget and Financial Officer of the ISI Unit in OSR. And Marilyn Aminchu, who is the Supervisor of the CFI Genome Contracts Unit in RFMS. So we welcome them. We're super excited to have them. And I invite Nathalie to come up and start the presentation.
So, thank you, Marlene. Good morning, all. I'm very pleased to be with all of you today. And I would like to take you on a tour of the CFI world. I will start this presentation by giving you a general introduction about the CFI programs, a kind of 101 crash course, I would say. And then Romina, Marilena, and I will guide you all along the life cycle of a CFI project. I will start with presenting the pre-award side of the CFI grant. Romina will do the post-award activities, and Marilena will conclude with the accounting side of the CFI projects, and we'll give you some key tips about budgeting, things that we must not forget from the onset of the proposal. So, first of all, I would like to say a few words about the ISI team. So, we have a big name, Institutional and Strategic Initiatives. Some of you may have known us as SURF, then FIP. Now you have to get used to the ISI acronyms. So I don't want to detail the variety of programs we are working on. I just would like to take the opportunity of this session to introduce you to my team. So the first one that I wanted to introduce is unfortunately not here today. It's Randall Little. He is very busy with our Canada Excellence Research Chair. It's a $10 million award, so we want to make sure that we will get it, and he's working currently at the office. I would like also to introduce Ada Sercik. Ada, if you can stand up, please. So Ada is our grants officer working on the pre-award side, and she's in charge of the LOF and the CRC programs. Romina, that you will see in a minute, that is our senior budget and financial officer working on the post-award side, and Linda Liu, who is our grants officer, working also with Romina on the post-award side. And another person that is not yet here, it's Tracy Anley, our admin assistant. So she will arrive, I know, a little bit later today, but she is the person that you have to contact when you don't know who to contact about CFI. You will see we have a certain number of persons that are involved in the life cycle of the project. So what is the CFI and what does it fund? Well, the Canada Foundation for Innovation, it's an independent corporation created by the government of Canada at the end of the 20th century. It looks like a very old grant now, but it's a key and a fundamental grant that we need, that all institutions need in Canada, because this is the main grant that is providing funding to buy equipment, to renovate and construct. So in terms of infrastructure, it is really essential. We want this funding opportunity to stay alive. I know that it's on the federal side, some funding have been cut to obtain infrastructure for researchers. So it's clear that the CFI is really a strategic funding opportunity, at least for McGill. And this program is really helping us to attract and retain our best researchers. We can provide them with the appropriate tool that they need. So the CFI, it is an institutional grant. PI, I know that you may meet a lot of researchers that are saying, I need infrastructure, but it's not, everybody is not authorized to apply to this kind of grant. First of all, a PI per se is not eligible. It's an institution that is eligible to submit a project in the name of a PI. So the institution submit the application. The applicant must have been authorized by the institution to apply for, and there is a whole procedure to select the PIs. And the recipient of the award is the institution. It's not the PI. It's not in the name of the PI. So McGill is therefore the owner of the infrastructure and is responsible of the award. So, for example, if we know that a researcher is leaving McGill, he cannot leave with the infrastructure. The infrastructure remains at McGill. So the funding structure for the CFI. You will hear a lot about the 40-40-20 model. The CFI is funding only 40% of the total cost of an infrastructure project. In our case, in the province of Quebec, 40% is provided by the Quebec government if the project has been selected. Depending on the location of the infrastructure, if it is on campus, it's going to be the MESRST, the Ministère de l'Enseignement Supérieur de la Recherche, de la Science et de la Technologie, who will fund the 40% provincial money. When it's on a research affiliate hospital, it will be the MSSS, the Ministère de la Santé, that will provide the funding. And then we have to identify a 20% to fully fund the infrastructure. The advantage of the CFI is that they accept that special rebate provided by vendors that we call the CFI, in-kind rebate, it is considered as part of the budget setup. So it's a real chance for us. And Marilena will give you some more details about what is the CFI in-kind rebate. For the rest, well, we have to find the cash contribution. So it may come from McGill Central, from the faculty, from the hospital, from the department, from the PI. And when it's the basic program, like the LOF that I'm going to talk about, usually it's the PI and the startup that they use to provide the missing cash contribution. So the CFI funding programs. The CFI has two main funding programs. The first one is the Leaders Opportunity Fund. This is our bread and butter at McGill. And we use it essentially to attract researchers. It's part of the package we give to the researcher when they arrive. We want to make sure that they will have the appropriate infrastructure to be able to do their research here at McGill, and that the infrastructure will work in the environment where it needs to be installed. So in this case, it's a predetermined allocation. So you have to imagine that the CFI is having a big envelope and is distributing this envelope between the diverse universities in Canada. And it's according to the revenue of each university. And we get a new allocation every 3-4 years. The last one, we got it in 2010. We have to use it by the end of this year. It was about $9 million. So since the inception of the CFI program, I think it's about $75 million that we have obtained. And we have less than $5 million to claim to the CFI currently. And I can guarantee you that we have sufficient projects in the pipeline, and it will be requested by October 15 this year. So this program is really to support the need of one researcher. You may have up to two co-applicants on those grants. The other major program that the CFI is having is the Leading Edge and the New Initiative Funds. In this case, it's an open competition. So in that case, the CFI has here again a big envelope. Each institution is said to have a max allocation to apply for, which is in general three times the envelope that they have. And in that case, we are competing with each other. And it's only the best projects that will be funded. In the case of the LOF program, there is no real competition between projects. In that case, if the project meets the criteria, is outstanding, it will be funded. It will not compete with another one. Whereas for the LEF and the NIF, it will be a real competition. What I want to say also to you about the Leaders Opportunity Fund, it's maximum, it's $2 million total cost, whereas the Leading Edge and New Initiative Funds, it's multi-million dollar awards. So the Leading Edge Fund, it's a competition every 2 to 3 years. Some of you may have heard about the recent CFI 7 competition that we have had. This one has been a real tough one. And it's a team grant in that case, and it's a multi-million dollar award, and it's often an inter-institutional award. The projects include also partner on board, and they are using their own respective allocation. So there are other sources of funding at the CFI. It's less known, but I want to mention the Exceptional Opportunities Fund. This one, we have tried it at McGill several times. We've never succeeded to enter in this category. And I don't think the CFI has ever funded any projects in this category. So it's very, very difficult to enter and to meet the criteria of these. But it may be important for you to know that it does exist. And it's really when, let's say, we have an opportunity at McGill to get a multi-million dollar from a private partner, or we are going to get international funding for an international initiatives. And if we don't have the tools, we are unable to realize the activity. In that case, the CFI may do an accelerated review process, just to make sure that we have the instrument and bring the money in. But so far, whatever projects we have proposed, I don't think it was ever ranking in that category. But we can apply anytime. So in some cases, maybe one day we will have an opportunity to get there. The other program that I wanted to mention is the Automotive Partnership Canada Fund. This program, it's a collaborative, real collaborative agency funding program, because NSERC, SHRC, and NRC, CERC, and CFI put money together. And it was launched by the federal government at the time of the economic down, and especially when the automobile activities industry has been affected. And as you know, in Ontario, it was really affecting this. And so this program was more or less targeting the Ontario. But we have one program that we have been able to fund here, and it's Coupa, in the grants and foundation team that was working with the PIs and the team to work on that part, because it was really driven through the NSERC program. There was a CFI attached to this, and we have been able to obtain funding. But you see, we can still submit any time a project until 2014. And now the CFI starts to launch new initiatives. They are more creating partnership opportunities. They recently have launched two of them, and here again it's Rupa from the Grants and Foundation who is leading the activities. My team come on board if we see that we will apply as well for a CFI portion. So one is for the Advancing Big Data Science in Genomics, NSERC-driven. It's for Genome Canada, CIHR, CFI. This one is highly competitive. There will be only one project awarded. And in my opinion, at McGill, we have only one team that is meeting the criteria to get into this funding program. So it's very targeted, very narrow. The other one is digging into data challenge. And here again, the CFI pot for this competition is only $500,000. You may have four or five projects awarded. So you see, this is not a lot of money. But there is another funding program that is important. It's the Infrastructure Operating Fund. We don't really need to apply to demonstrate that we need the money. Every time a project for infrastructure has been awarded, it is automatically generated a certain amount of money to McGill. So it's representing about 30% of the CFI allocation. So remember, from funding model 40-40-20, we get on top of this, on the 40% CFI, we get 30% of the 40%. And this is for operating the infrastructure. And each institution is responsible for deciding how their funds will be divided among projects eligible to receive IOF. So Romina will give you a little bit more information about the IOF and the current method of distribution we have at McGill. Another thing that I want to mention to you, and this one, it's a competition, but it's to obtain operating fund. It's the major science initiatives. It was really targeting, I think, major facility funded in the past by the CFI for more than 50 million. In fact, it's only the national platforms that were really entering that category. And in that case, we would obtain 40% IOF money, but we had to identify 60% elsewhere. Whereas when we get the 30% for the standard all other projects of the CFI, we don't need to match the IOF contribution. In the case of the MSI, we had to match its operating fund, but we had to match the contribution. We are going to get soon some money from this MSI program because our researchers were involved in the Computes Canada CFI project. It was then one of the national platforms that have been funded through the MSI. CFI fund, I don't want to take too much time on this, but it's just to come back to the idea that we have a cap. Every time we want to apply to the CFI, we cannot apply for more than a certain cap. So we have an allocation. So in the case of the LOF allocation, internally, we redistribute the money we redistribute the allocation between each faculties according to the number of new recruits they are going to have, the number of new CRC they are going to have. So the faculty then are using this allocation to distribute it between their new recruits according to the needs of the new recruits. Centrally, we keep a pot of money. It's the provost VPRR pool. And we keep it for retention cases when a researcher wants to leave, and we try to keep the researcher at McGill. We try to find another package that can help the researcher with new tools. Or we keep it for faculties that usually does not have an allocation because they do not use they don't need CFI so often, but they have some cases, or for special opportunities. In the case of the LEF NIF program, this institution, we have an institutional envelope, and in that case, it's an internal competition that we process to give it to projects that will be allowed to go forward. And for the national envelope, when it's taken directly from the national envelope, in that case, there is a need for an institutional approval for the PI to go forward.
Can you define CRC?
It's the Canada Research Chairs. So it's salary award. CFI life cycle, I've tried to make it as simple as possible, but I think it's still a slide that you'll take the time while you will be home to look at it in details. I think the bigger route that I wanted to show that the first part is really the ISI team that is having hands on a project, and we start working with the PI. So in red is really the ISI team that I wanted to highlight, and you see beginning until we submit the proposal, and once we have the award agreement in our hand, until then it's essentially our team that is working. with facilities, with some time our FMS because we need their advice for some aspect of setting up the projects. Sometimes with procurement because we need very detailed information about the quotes and so on. And then start the life cycle that may be repetitive according to the number of years we will need to run these projects. In that case, it's our FMS that is really taking the lead over these, but the ISI team is always around because we have some activities, some control, some monitoring we have to do, some requests we have to do to the CFI, that's it. And the project progress report also that the PIs have to do. By this slide, I wanted to give you an idea of the timelines for the CFI program. In my office, for the law, for example, we are handling from 40 to 50 projects a year. You're going to tell me, well, that's peanut. It's really peanut when you compare to the team of Olga that is having thousands of submissions in a short period of time. It's really peanut, but the time we need to spend on each application and the commitment that we need to have on those applications is really different. So usually for the LOF program, minimum it takes 3 to 4 months to prepare an application. And usually when we have a targeted deadline with a PI, you realize that, oh, finally, I will never make it. And they go back to the next. So 3-4 months, it's rare that we have it. Usually it's 3-4 months plus 3 other 4 months. Just to be ready for a proposal. Then we submit the proposal. It will take 4-5 months to the agency to announce, to make the award announcement. Then we have up to 9 months to finalize the budget, which is to validate that the information we have in the budget are still okay. I would say that when we arrived in the office, and I look at Romina because we arrived at the same time, I think we had about, before any given award announcement, we have between 75 to 80 finalization to process. It means that it's 75 to 80 funds that were not opened. It was incredible. It was taking us more than a year to finalize. We were systematically not respecting the timelines. Nowadays, I've checked for the last year, we have less than 5 finalization to process before any given award announcement. And the mean now is around 5 months. So we are way under the cap that was set up by the CFI. Then finalization is done. We get the award agreement, general 1.5 to 2 months. When it's arrived here, there's the questions of signature. We still have to go around to get all the signature, but it's done very quickly. I'm not sure that it even still take 2 weeks to do that. And then we are ready to buy the infrastructure, install the infrastructure, address all the elements that we have to do. For a LOF, usually it takes 2 to 3 years to install the infrastructure and close the fund. It doesn't mean that this is the end of the story because we still have some reporting to do, the project progress report that is more about the outcomes of the projects that we'll still have to do with the CFI. And you never know, there are audits that are coming after. So even if the account is closed, it's not the end of the story. I wanted also to give you an idea of the timelines for the CFI, LEF, and NIF. And you will see those ones are totally different. So it's a competition every 2 to 3 years. At the last competition, we started with 16 projects in the pipeline. Finally, we were able to submit 11 projects. At the previous competition, it was around 20 projects that were submitting. In the previous rounds, it was way more projects. But, I mean, time is of essence for this. It's really hard to build and making sure that all the components of a perfect application is there. So at the last competition, for example, we launched the internal call a year before starting selecting internally which project would make it. And during this year, we have worked with a researcher that were interested by this program. So it's already a huge amount of work that is done just to work with potential PIs that could be interested for that. Then, once the projects have been selected, it took us about 4 months to get up to the stage of the letter of intent submission. We are still working on the full proposal. We are still developing it. But then it takes us about, I don't think it's 6 months. I think it's 4 months again. There is a mistake here. Just to submit the full proposal. I can tell you those days were tough. I think I've worked 18 hours a day, 7 days a week for a month during that period of time. This is really intensive. Then to get the award announcement, it takes to the agency 7 months, because in that case, it's not only an expert committee review, you have a multidisciplinary assessment committee review, you have a special multidisciplinary assessment committee review. So it's extending the time you need to get through the review process by the agency. 7 months. And then you have 9 months once awarded, if you are lucky. The success rate is really low, it's around 30%. So lots of work, but not many winners. You have again to go back to the finalization process. We hope this year, we cross our fingers, that we will do it with less than 5-6 months to finalize that. At last competition, we succeeded to submit by the 9-month deadline, but the dossiers were not perfect, so it took us almost 1.5 years to finalize those budgets. So you see that since the beginning, the project, the PI has an idea of buying an equipment, you see the number of years that pass before they can get access to the infrastructure. Well, in some cases, the researcher is going to say, finally, now I don't need that functionality, I need something else. In some cases, they are going to say, well, the vendor went to bankruptcy, so I can't buy that anymore. And what I can tell you is that the CFI doesn't like that we process changes at the finalization stage. We have tried that, we've had a budget cut, we had to renegotiate hard with the CFI to say, oh, finally, let us keep the piece of equipment like that. We purchased everything, and at the end we came back saying, oh, now it's too late, we don't need it anymore. At that time, the CFI was ready to accept a change request. But don't do that at finalization stage, you will get a budget cut. But of course, we have to live with it's taking so much time, so many years, to get from the point of the idea to the time you are ready really to buy the infrastructure, that so many changes happen. So it's also a complexity of preparing a budget, because you have to think of variances from Canadian to US dollar, because you are going to purchase an equipment in US, or when it's in euro, these days it's terrible because the exchange rate is varying a lot. So it's all these that we have to take into account. And you never know, the price can increase, the price can decrease. Of course, you will go for the big piece of equipment, you will go to tender, so you have a chance to reduce the cost, because we are not tendering to get the price at the application stage, of course, so we just ask for a quote and we get a price. But we have to take all these aspects into account when preparing the budget. And yes, we have to face some changes, of course, for those big requests. So here again, I would say that for the ones that were approved at CFI 6, I think it's going to take about 3-4 years to almost install all the infrastructure. That for the very first projects that we had at McGill that were awarded in the very first years, it takes us up to 10 years to install all the infrastructure. So once the fund is opened, so you imagine from the idea, 15 years. Closing of the account, but as usual, that's not the end of the story. You still have the project progress report to do. You still have the audit that came after, and you have to remember, oh, how did we do that? So the floor is yours, Ramina. I say pre-award. It's still me. I thought that I was done. God, pre-award. Let's go. So what can be purchased with CFI grants? Of course, research equipment, warranties, and we can budget up to 5 years of warranty. One thing important is that when the PI will purchase the equipment, he must make sure to buy the warranty at the same time. It must be made at the same time, because if the PI buy the warranty, let's say 2 years after the equipment, it's no more considered as part of the equipment, as infrastructure fund. It's considered as operating fund. Then it's no more eligible. Then we are not refunded. So it's very important to explain to the PI that if we budget the warranties, it must be absolutely purchased at the same time you buy the piece of equipment. And the warranties are so expensive. Usually it's 10% of the total cost of a machine, and we are buying a lot of multi-million dollar machine. It's very important that you budget the extended warranty for 5 years. We can buy software. We can buy lab furniture, communication infrastructure. We can also budget some travel cost to go to see the vendors when it's something brand new and we don't know yet which vendor will be the best one. It's also for the initial training, one person or a team all in one, but it's not going to be to pay several times a different person. It's only a one-time initial training. Of course, construction and renovation of space, and I would say at McGill, about 70 to 80% of the project we submit have renovations. McGill is an old university. We have a lot of old buildings. They are very nice. There are even sometimes heritage buildings, but they were really not adapted for the modern type of research our researchers are doing. So we need to make sure every time that the infrastructure we install is going to be functional. Acquisition or development of a database, so it can be salary necessary to up to the point where a tool is ready to be used. And the cost associated with a digital library initiative that builds on the CFI-funded program that I'm not very familiar with. The non-eligible cost, purchase or lease of real property, but I don't think we have the intention anyway to do that at McGill. If the PI wants to buy the infrastructure and he will use it for teaching or clinical care, then we have a problem. The infrastructure is used only for research. If he wants to use it partially for research and also partially for clinical care, in that case, we have to prorate the price that the CFI will accept to co-fund. The internal fees, the operating cost, high-speed network, supplies and consumables, it's really operating cost, trainee stipends and researcher salaries, research-related cost, conference travel, and administrative cost. So everything related to the operating side, that's not on the CFI infrastructure budget. So preparing a good CFI application, it's a lot of back and forth exchange with the PI. We are really doing a personalized approach with the PI. You need also to imagine that for the LOF program, because it's essentially used for our new recruits, most of the time we work with PIs that are not even yet arrived at McGill. So we have to work from distance, we have to talk of equipment, we have to talk of space issues with somebody that is not even here. So it's not always so easy. And we want to make sure that everything is well articulated for the budget, and that when we will be ready, when the PI will be awarded and ready to buy, there will not be a shortfall of cash somewhere. So it requires a good understanding of the infrastructure requested. It requires evaluation of the feasibility of setting up the infrastructure. It's can we build the infrastructure? We have some researchers that wants to create a new tool that not even doesn't exist. And we have had problems in the past because the feasibility was not really evaluated, and it has taken years just to get something that was partially working. We need to know also if the equipment would fit where we want to install it. So, and I have a nice case like that where the researcher had verified that, yes, in the room, the minor city freezer was fitting nicely, but he did not check that the door was too small, that he could not enter the fridge into the room. So we had to break the wall to create double doors, but too bad. It was not budgeted, and he had to find the money elsewhere to pay this aspect. So we need to consider a lot of things about the infrastructure.
Does it allow for fabrication of equipment? Like,
yes.
Can our PIs actually fabricate equipment here?
Totally. You can buy components and build it yourself up to the point that the tool is ready. Yeah. So we need to make sure that the infrastructure can be installed properly. And now we have a new request from the CFI, which is about the high-power computing components. Every time a researcher wants a server over $50,000, we have to talk to Compute Canada. The CFI doesn't like now that we install servers everywhere on our campuses. They really want us to work as much as possible with the Compute Canada and the sites that are located at various places in Canada. We have one here that is located at ETS. It's Clumec. It's really a McGill part. And it's an additional review that we have to do now. In the past, we could install it wherever we want. Now we have to justify why we want to install this there and why we want to buy that model. And we, again, need to get the approval of Compute Canada for such a kind of tool, if we want to buy it through the CFI. It's really the high-power computing platform in Canada. So the ISI internal review, as I said, it's a personalized approach. We work hand-in-hand with the PI, with the faculty, to build a good proposal. We validate eligibility of expenses, the source of in-kind and cash, and validate that this is eligible. We work on the content of the proposal, and we verify that the researcher is really answering to the question and is meeting the criteria. And we check also that the clarity and language of the presentation. The CFI, when a researcher is giving too much details on the program, it's not so much adapted to this program, because you will have, it's often a multidisciplinary committee that is reviewing the application, so they may not be an exact expert in the field of research of the researcher. So you need to have a language that is more accessible to everybody. We check the content, the budget. In fact, we build the budget for the researcher. They just have to provide us with the quotes, and we take care of the rest. We check the CV. And we have this form that I'm going to show you that we call the RESNAF, which is about the location of the infrastructure and the need for renovation. We work also on the operating budget that we have to define, and of course the checklist before submission. Space validation, it's working with facilities. They have helped us to develop a new form that every candidate applying to the CFI now is completing. It's a tool that helps us to confirm that the faculty has approved to give that rooms in that building to the researcher for that purpose. It's also a way to see what are the specifications of the instruments that the PI wants to buy, and what are the specifications then of the space that we will need to have. And then it's a tool that we give to facilities, and they will start working with our PI to evaluate the need for renovations. So it's this form, we call it the Research Equipment and Space Need Assessment Form. So the acronym is RESNAF. Developing good CFI budget. I'm not sure I want to go again through this. I mean, it's information that I've more or less said before, and that my colleagues will mention to you in a moment. What I can tell you is that we are working with the PIs, we are working with facilities, we are working with procurement services, we are working with the faculty, the chair, the deans, the hospitals. For some competition, we are working with VPE, we are working with the provost, and we are even working sometime with the principal for some major and strategic projects. We are working with RFMS, of course. And so it's a multi-team effort. And so for to develop the budget, we have also internally developed a tool, because the format of the budget online for the CFI was quite uneasy if you had not make a certain number of steps for detailing your budget. So this tool is very useful for us. I know that when a PI see it for the first time, they say, how am I going to use it? But they are using it maybe one, two, three times max in their life, because it's not an award that you are going to apply regularly to. So that's why we are really taking care of that part of the project. Of course, before submission, you need to have a checklist. The checklist is slightly different from the standard OSR checklist we have, because in that case, we not only need to have a confirmation on the commitment for the cash contribution, like you have on the standard OSR checklist, but in that case, we need to validate what is the source of the CFI allocation. As I mentioned at the beginning, it can be a faculty allocation, it can be a VP provost allocation, it can come from the national allocation. And it's information that we had to track, plus little other details that we had to track. So we systematically complete the form for, pre-complete the form for the PI. We just have to add a few things about his name or things like that when we have not added it. But usually the checklist is really completed, ready for signature by all parties. And recently we have developed one that is very specific for the large-scale LEF and NIF competition, where in that case the signature we have goes up to the provost and VPRIR for the cash commitment that everyone is having. So those documents are very critical for us because it's a confirmation of the cash commitment. And cash commitment can be several million dollars sometime. CFI online submission. So we are ready to press the submit button. I just want to mention to you that the CFI has developed a new system. They have made an update that in February 2013, so it's now online also for the LOF program, but it started in October 2011, but it was for the large-scale competition that they had implemented this new system. I do admit that the CFI has really done a great job. I really like the system. It's making our life easier. And for the researcher, it's also more easier because now we can upload the main part of the proposal. In the past, we had to complete a form online. You could not add figures. You could not add tables. It was very painful to complete. Now you can attach a PDF. So the researcher has more flexibility in writing the text. As long as the content is there as expected, the formatting also sometimes can make a difference. The budget entry is also simpler. They don't ask anymore the cost breakdown per year because they know that anyway, when we start submitting the proposal in 2 years of time when we will buy the equipment, it will have changed. So it's only for a year. And it is really a tool that is making our life more easier. The only thing for those that are submitted with the CRC, the form is still under the CRC portfolio. The CFI form is still there. CAM system is just to show you when you what it looks like when you go online. And there is still one step we need to do. So we have the checklist, we have submit. Press the submit button, send the proposal to the CFI, but we must not forget that 40% of the cash is going to come from Quebec. So in the past, we had to complete a form, the Quebec form. That was just a brief summary and the amount of money that we were requesting to the Quebec government. Now they have developed a system online, the CIR, the Système d'information des infrastructures de recherche. So the PI needs to create a portfolio to complete the form that is in a five-step process. We don't see the form as long as the PI has not gone through the five steps. And the form now asks more questions about the benefits for Quebec. Is it a strategic proposal for Quebec? So are they ready to fund, really, the proposal? So that part, maybe the last one, is still very important. So we start working with the PIs minimum a month before the submission to make sure that just the summary will be perfect and we'll make sure that our Quebec funders are extremely happy to fund the project. So now it's with electronic signatures. In the case of on-campus infrastructure, it's our VP or Mary, Margaret, who is signing in the name of the institution. When we have a location at the hospital, we will need the McGill signature plus the signature of the director of the hospital. But it's quite simple now. It's not a paper that we have to give hands on hands from one person to one another. It's an electronic signature. And here it's just an idea of the form we have. So here I don't want to detail this so much. I just want you to know that the CRC, we are working also on the CRC program, and we can have joint submissions, CRC and CFI. The CRC is really a program in the hands of the provost office, but we are working hands in hands all along the review process. I'm participating to hold the internal review committee that are set up for the development of the CRC. But at the same time, we are preparing the CFI. So we submit the proposal, the joint submission, at the same time through the CRC website. Once it is awarded, the CRC post-award management is the business of the provost office. The CFI is our business and continues through our process. What about pre-purchase? I thought it was important to mention that because we often have this question. Yes, the CFI allows pre-purchasing up to a certain limit. In the case of the LOF program, equipment that have been purchased up to 6 months prior to the date of submission, if the project is awarded, we will be refunded. For the LEF and NIF, the timelines is more a year. Equipment purchased up to a year prior to the submission deadlines, but the number of months depends of the competition, in fact. Here again, we may be refunded if the project is successful. But you need to make sure that you have purchased according to the CFI rules, that when Marilena will ask you the quotes and the confirmation of the in-kind CFI in-kind rebate, if it's not on it, too bad, you will have to find the money for it. And in most cases, the researcher asking us for bridge funding, but for equipment, we have no bridge funding system here. That's the responsibility of the PI. You can use this startup. That's the responsibility of the faculty. I know that this is an approach that the hospitals are often using. I think it's the Douglas that is often doing that for their new recruits. I personally do not encourage that because you never know. I mean, even if the success rate is high, there is always a risk.
Nathalie, sorry. Mm-hmm. Do you, when you submit the application and the equipment's already been bought, do you tell CFI that the equipment has already been purchased?
No.
Or is, okay, so we don't tell them.
It depends, well, if we know that, well, I know that the Quebec government, I don't know how they do that, but they are part of the review process. In fact, they are processing the expert review process. It's the FRQ that is organizing the expert review commitment process. We are the only province for which we are doing this. The expert is done by Quebec. But Quebec knows very well the infrastructure we have in the province. So when they see that this is a duplication, if you have not indicated that the duplication that appears on the proposal is just the piece of equipment that is already installed, that's the one you are budgeting here. If they don't see, realize this is it, they can say, okay, duplication, finally, we don't want to fund you and you're done. So we have some time to be careful with pre-purchase that it's not gonna, you know, kick us at the end. But normally we are not obliged to mention that at all.
Hi. The 6 months starts when? Is it the date of an invoice, a receipt date? When is that 6 months?
No, the 6 months is the period prior to the submission of the proposal.
Right.
So during this period, you may have launched a purchase.
So say, for example, a purchase was submitted. Mm-hmm. Purchase order went through. Mm-hmm. In the meantime, we get notification the law fails. We've bought this equipment. It's prior to the next LOF where the intent is to resubmit. But the requisition has gone through, but an invoice, the equipment could have not been received. An invoice was not paid. Does a 6 month start from when we submit that
PO? Well, in that case, it's still going eligible. It's really when we have paid the invoice and the goodies at McGill. So it's really the starting point for you to say, okay, that's the date of reference for the purchase. Are we within the 6 months? So it's true that, it, for example, for the renovation, I mean, we may have launched renovations 6 months prior to the submission, fail, but we have not completed at all the renovation. That's not an issue. Then we submit, we are able to submit at the next submission deadline, and then the renovations are continuing, and we have the final check paid. But we are now within the 6 months period of the new submission deadline, and then it's okay. So, but I mean, we always have to be extremely careful with that, because we can be in the time frame, we can be out of the time frame. So when a researcher really wants to do that, I always advise talk to us first.
And as far as the burden being put on the faculties for the pre-purchase, is that something that the university would be looking at? Because the researchers come in and they want their equipment and they want it fast and they don't want to wait that year to get it, for example. So one is, okay, yes, within the CFI guidelines, we'll issue a loan or a bridge fund. But say that, one is, can the university contribute to that as well, that bridge?
For the equipment, no. For the equipment, no. The only solutions that we are offering for the moment is for the renovations, because we know that it's taking a lot of time. It's purely reserved for the new recruits, for researchers considered as a retention or past 24 months since the date of recruit. They are not allowed to access this system. But for a new recruit, once we submit the LOF, we make an evaluation of the risk. I make a recommendation to the provost and to the dean, and then there is a letter that both of them are going to sign to share the risk, 50-50 for the renovation in case the application would not be successful. So it's a system that we have started to implement, and I would say that for some projects that where I know that we really need to go quickly through this, I really start requesting those FOPLs. As long as the dean is ready to co-sign and take the risk 50-50, then yes, we can start doing it. We do it for renovation, but for equipment, forget about it. It's really a faculty matter.
And if a CFI fails, mm-hmm. And it was used as a recruitment tool, and this star comes in, and then the CFI ends up failing, what happens to those promises that were made to that recruit? Where's the burden?
You have the possibility to resubmit to the CFI. So here again, it's an internal decision. It's the faculty, it's for a laugh, it's the faculty who is going to decide. Most of the time, I do admit that I give some advice to the faculty saying, in that case, yes, go ahead. It was premature submission. We can resubmit next time, and we are going to be successful. Some other cases, I really say, no, it's not even necessary to try. We are not meeting the criteria of the CFI, and we'll never meet the CFI criteria. And in that case, they take the decision really to withdraw. So the allocation is still in the hands of the faculty. They can do what they want with it. They can give it to another researcher. They can give it maybe to a member of the researcher that they have recruited. But it's still part of the decision of the faculty for the LOF to take a decision on this amount. And we have had cases also for some researchers. Normally, the package is given to the researcher to make sure that he will have the infrastructure when he arrives or shortly after his arrival. But in some cases, we have seen researchers 2 years after their arrival, they had still not applied to the CFI. Do they really need the money? Do we still need to keep the commitment? In that case, I call the faculty and you say, well, you have to take a decision. One-time trial, last time, next submission deadline, he's in the pipeline, or forget about it, he will not have any allocation. So there are mechanisms like that we have, because we don't want to keep money to someone forever when the person doesn't want to use it.
In that case, does the money stay with the faculty?
Yeah.
And they can give it to someone else if they
choose to? They can give it to someone else if they want.
Eligible person, of course.
It's really their decision.
In the case of the lofts, for example, stay with the faculty, but in the other cases, it's a competition, so there's no money that really stays with the faculty to be resubmitted, let's say, or to be reallocated to other researchers, but that financial burden or that commitment that was made to that researcher, that's now the faculty's responsibility,
yes.
And should it not be also considered the university's responsibility?
I'm sorry, it's really the faculty who took the decision to do that. That's their business. We systematically advise the faculty of not doing so. Every time I see a risk, I tell it. They listen, they do not listen. Maybe you refer to the Faculty of Medicine?
Yes.
I've said thousands of times in the case you are certainly talking about, and it was not really specifically for the CFI, it was for the PSRV2 program. I said, for this program, never purchase prior to the approval, because it is never refunded. We have said that. LV was on board at the very early time when this subject came, when she has seen that they were ready to buy something through the PSRV2. Do we have an application? No, we have nothing in hands. And I said, don't do that, don't do that. I've said it to everybody. Last summer, we got a PO that was in the air for $1 or $2 million for server. I said, don't do that. I called Michael DiCrapa. Said, don't do that. We still don't know if we are going to be awarded. And in November, we have seen the sous-ministre adjoint coming at McGill and saying, well, you are not respecting the criteria. Yeah, you are allowed. We want to reserve some money for this researcher, but you are not respecting the criteria. Too bad for you.
Okay.
That's the only thing I can say. I mean, I've done my best to really alert on what the risk could be. And I know that in this case, it's not only the faculty, there was also central decision. It's also a decision that was taken by the previous dean. So all the ones that were taking really the decision that time to go ahead are no more here. And I know that the current dean has to leave with the mess now.
So for the renovation that you say the design phase, it's only the design phase that's 50-50 originally? If that doesn't go through, does the renovation project continue?
And we decide then if it continues or if we stop. Because depending on the amount, I mean, if it was for $40,000, it's peanut, I guess we go until the end. But if it was for $2 million, maybe we are going to think about it twice. And I would say the 50-50 risk sharing is only for the LOF programmer. It's not for the LEF and NIF. No one will take the risk. Knowing the success rate, no one will take the risk to start something prior to a decision. The only thing we do, and this is what we have initiated for the CFI projects that have been awarded, usually you have to wait for the fund opening to start doing the renovations, but in that case we have immediately asked for a bridge funding from Central for the CFI 7. So we have one project for Mark McKee, the other one is for Peter Gruder. And those two projects, we have provided the fund necessary to launch the design phase to facility. So it's already in the pipeline. When we are just short, and we are going to shortly submit the finalized budget. It's almost ready, but they have the money in hand since it was announced in November, end of November, and in January they had the full poll to really start the renovations. Like that, it's avoiding further delays.
And how much did you say was a percentage of the CFI that could be allocated toward renovations?
How much is
the percentage of the total CFI that would ideally go to renovations?
So here again, there is no limit. The CFI is not saying that there is a limit in terms of percentage of cost for renovation in a budget. But what we have to remember is that the objective of the CFI is to buy infrastructure. The renovation is just to make sure that we can properly install the infrastructure and it will be functional. So the renovations is not to do fancy things like we want. It's really targeted to make sure that the infrastructure would be functional. I would say that in the past we have advised to stay within 30-35% of the total cost of the budget to be dedicated to renovation. We have realized that when we were over this amount, we had more questions. In that case, we really had to justify the cost. And we have a lot of questions about the cost of renovations. We are particularly expensive at McGill compared to other universities, but this is because of the building we have. They are old, they are heritage, so even if heritage building, it's even more costly to renovate because you have to do this according to certain standards. So if you see a case that finally it's going to cost maybe 50 or 60% of the total cost of the project, then we see how we can properly justify that if we see that this is the only way we have to install the infrastructure. But I can't say there is a cap, that there is a limit, that the CFI does not authorize more. This is not true, but it's more, I would say a psychological barrier, the 30%. We know that it's more difficult when we are over 30% to justify this.
Thank you.
So we have submitted.
Just out of curiosity, you get the grant, you get the equipment, the renovations come out more than you expected. So the equipment never becomes functional.
In the early years of the CFI, I think that we were maybe not doing a proper review of the to estimate the cost of the renovation. So I guess for several projects we were under budgeted. I would say that since the CFI 6 competition, and then Rosemary can talk about that a lot, there has been a big modifications made between the communication between my office and facilities. And facilities has taken a lot of responsibilities to make sure that we would have good estimates. I would say that now from one extreme where we were underestimating the cost of renovations, now we are more in the opposite side where we are overestimating the cost, because we are keeping a contingency, but I think we just need to maybe come back a little bit more central in the estimate. But it happens sometimes still that there is something that you could not imagine. There is always a surprise. We cannot really, you dig, you break the wall, and oops, you find something that nobody could have realized before. Or, the functionality has changed. The piece of equipment that we wanted to buy was really this one. Finally, does not exist anymore. We have to take another one, but the other one, oops. The functionality is changing, so the requirement for the rooms are totally changing. And then, we have to do what we can and maybe decide on not doing some parts to make sure that the equipment is going to be functional.
No, I was just thinking of a piece of equipment I heard about that's been sitting around for over a year because it's missing 4 or 5 feet of...
Yeah. But I certainly can give you examples that for which we underestimated the cost. But it's in this room. It's in this building. This building, the cryo microscope, it's a huge microscope. If you have not seen that, you really need to ask to Vali Oyatola or Isabelle Rouillet, who are researchers here at McGill, to see this microscope. It does not look like a microscope at all. It's a big, big box within a room. And submission quickly, project funded, everybody is happy. And when we started doing the renovation, little problems. We had to dig, we had to break the roof. We had to make a special ventilation. Conclusion, $4 million over. So that's why we are very careful, and facilities is very careful when we are preparing renovation estimates, because we know that we can be in deep trouble if we don't do that properly.
I just wanted to check the 20%
funding in the past, you could not use Tri-Council or provincial or federal Tri-Council funds to match up on the 20%. Does that rule still exist?
Yes, it is still the same.
So it's got to be very careful if people buy things on their NSERC or SHRC Tri-Council fund, equipment fund, they cannot now use it for the CFI unless they move 100% of the cost off the NSERC fund onto the CFI fund.
That's right.
So it hasn't changed. Okay, thank you.
So, results is announced. Of course, we are successful. And after a few months, we announced the result to the researcher. And the file moved from the ISI pre-award team to the ISI post-award team. Now it's my time to step back and to give the floor to Romina.
Hi, everybody. So at this point, the researcher is really exhausted with his application, and he's really happy on getting his monies. I just want to say before I just continue that it's really overlapping activities in between pre, post, and RFMS. And really, it all gets combined, and sometimes we do have to get communications in between all of us at the same time. At pre-award, sometimes we speak with procurement facilities, and it's really an ongoing story back and forth. So, just so you know, when we receive a document that is called the board decision. This board decision tells us who got awarded and if they had conditions to this award. So the first step is we go and we try to meet the conditions. And this is, most of the times it's pre-award working on this, so it's Alan Randall who really takes care of meeting the conditions. Unless they're too busy with other applications, then post-award comes in and try to help on these conditions. So, and then we start with a revised budget. The revised budget, it's we prepare a revised budget builder. It's pretty similar to the one that we did on the pre-award when we really asked the researchers a lot of questions about his quotes, his equipment, functionalities, and we go back into also the budget justification. This is a key document from the complete application where we really, really work closely with the researcher. And that's where we try, and pre-award also, they really get they really try to not mention models. Sometimes it's necessary to mention models, but it's more to the functionality and what is it really the objectives of the piece of equipment. So at this time, since the time that this researcher has applied, maybe 6-7 months has applied, that's for the LOF, but even for the LEF, maybe a year has passed from his application. So if he's changing the model, the functionality still is the same. So this is where we play a role, and we ask the researchers if they're going to have any type of changes to his budget. So we really go and ask them, okay, what are the changes? What exactly are the functionalities? Are you really changing your complete equipment? And these are questions that comes at finalization stage. We address changes in prices. We try to keep always a cushion when we are preparing the budget builder. It's at this time we reduce the cushion from pre-award to post-award, so it's really closer to the actual purchase of the equipment. We are trying to work also closely with renovations and facilities. If they have started, we try to consider maybe some things that had been missed at pre-award when we're preparing the budget builder. Also, it's important to mention that the renovations for CFI has to start 18 months before they have to initiate before from the date of the award was submitted. So that's why we have started with working closely with facilities and mentioning that it's really, really important for to have this bridge funding for pre-award. It's really a key thing now that we're working on, and especially for large grants, because this rule will apply also for this LEF and NIF, where we have not started before. So we really work closely with them and try to see if there is some changes. They try to really focus on the piece of equipment. There is a lot of instances where we are with facilities going with the researchers to evaluate the room and see what has been missed, if there was something else that it was not considered even at pre-award. So that's one thing that we have implemented at pre-award. This is our second review, so we try really to see and foresee changes in the future. As Natalie mentioned, the finalization has to be submitted 9 months after the award submission. So we really try to reduce this gap, these 9 months, so the researcher can start really acquiring and setting up his lab. Because don't forget, this award is really for the immediate need for the researcher to start his lab and work on his equipment. So it's really important for us to push through and try to finalize as soon as possible. We are now, if the researcher send us an email and confirms with the faculty that they have not have any changes, we try to move forward and try to get all the documents to RFMS so they can open the award as soon as possible. And as of timelines, CFI will take about 6 to 8 weeks to review the finalization and get us a notice of award. So these are the details that I think that I went over. I just spoke a little bit on what is it, the real review that we do on the budget. Exchange rates, in-kind contributions. So the in-kind contributions is a really key element on the budget. Marilene is going to go into a lot more detail on it. So I'll just want to mention that the in-kind contributions that we do is we ask the researchers if, like, for quotes over 100,000, they have in-kind. Any quote that has CFI in-kind has to be recorded, and we need to have, like, the physical or at least the PDF version of it with a note that says CFI discount contribution. So this is the second review. First review, it was done at pre-award. We coordinate again with procurement. Some of the pieces, each project is a different world, and some of the pieces of equipment will have more work than others. Sometimes a researcher decides to buy a used piece of equipment. So then it's a lot more work. We need to realize how it's going to be the fair market value assessed. We go through to Marilena. We ask her, what do you think? If we get an audit, what documents are you going to need? So at this stage also, we try to avoid problems for the future. We go over the quotes once again. We review that all prices, installation, if it's paid by the company, any type of insurance, shipping was included, how many years of warranty? Because if, like Natalie said, we are allowed to have 5 years extended warranty, but not all the pieces of equipment are going to go for 5 years. Some of them, the researcher requires only 2 years. It will depend on the piece of equipment, and that's one thing that we work at finalization. We figure that if you're not going to buy the warranties with a piece of equipment, then these warranties should be transposed into the IOF. And especially if it's $1 million piece of equipment, we want to make sure that we have those warranties within the budget somewhere or another, that these warranties are going to be covered. Some instances, the budget also will have travel. And this is when, let's say, the researcher has to travel to the company to assess which piece of equipment is going to be the best for his project. And these would have to be forecasted, though, before at pre-award. site preparation. Natalie, I think that she really went over and said what is the requirements for each piece of equipment. For some projects, they don't require, as they don't have renovations. So for some others, it will require for the little specs that the equipment has. So if that they have humidity control, if it's a clean room, any type of security, it's vibration. There's a lot of little issues that we go over, and we work really closely with facilities. And it's been a learning curve since we started. At the beginning, we were not as close with facilities. Now we realize it's really important to engage them, even at the initial stages of the project, to not to encounter problems at the end. And it's always that part of the guidelines and the rules that we want to be involved within the complete project, always trying to guide the researcher and the university in trying not to encounter any problems like the $4 million overrun that we had. And also sometimes we can include training in the budget, so that's also assessed. We signed, just for a little note, we signed with CFI when we submit the revised budget. To CFI, we submit it's a confirmation of award conditions, and this confirmation will tell CFI, yes, we have started, we are within the 18 months from the renovations, yes, that we have, we are going to be purchasing equipment after the renovations are done. Because what happens is that the renovations, like Natalie mentioned, is supposed to be to house, really, and the CFI infrastructure. So why are you going to be purchasing equipment if you don't have your renovations ready? Where are they going to be located? How is the equipment going to be really being used? And if you don't have really your renovations to ready to receive your pieces of equipment and your lab. So these are things that we sign to CFI, and we tell them, yes, we are compliant with the granting agency. So really this is like a step-by-step process on what is it done at our office at Post Award. So we collect all the signatures. We prepared a RAF. We're still with the research account approval form. This is like in the old times, in the old system. It's working good for us. We don't have a large volume, so we're really going into details. And not only that we prepare the form, is that we compile all the documents, all the quotes with all our calculations and income contributions, any notes on warranties, if there's going to be cash contributions, emails backing this cash contribution with the FOPL numbers. So all these documents is compiled so RFMS can have a complete dossier on the project. So this is going to RFMS, and then we provide a fully executed award agreement. And we also send this information, don't forget, is Quebec also involved in the picture, so we always send this information to Quebec. And then the last thing is, once we receive the award agreement, is that we prepare a form that is sent to the researcher on how to access their operating monies. Some notes about this award or the RAF that we prepare is that the RAF is open for the full amount of the project. As far as the end date, start and end date, it's also open for the full period of the award. So when we're preparing the revised budget, we really ask the researchers, when is it that you're planning to purchase the equipment? So let's say if they say May, then we look into the quote and we say, well, you're going to have probably 2 months delivery. So if it's May, then June, July, maybe by August, you're going to have your equipment in-house. And then how long is it going to keep you for testing the equipment? So we really work closely with the researcher on having really a real timelines for each of the pieces of equipment. And that's going to give us the end date of the project. Then once we gave all the documents to research unrestricted funds in the past, RFMS now, the fund administrator. They're assigned a fund administrator, and they're really in charge of the project. We are always in the back if they are some changes or as an advisor, but it's really the fund administrator who's really dedicated on the project. This is just an overview of all the activities that our post-award at ISI does, and I just wanted to ensure, because like I said, all the projects are different. Some of them encounter partners. Some of them, they have different needs. So let's say we process interinstitutional agreements sometimes before the award agreement and before finalization. And this is important to mention because, especially for the large scale projects, we act as a liaison with CFI, hospitals, any other, partner sometimes. Even sometimes I get vendors calling if this is going to be awarded, how long it's going to take. We always speak with other units within the university. We're an advisor of if this is eligible or not for any unit, RFMS, or even a pre-award. We try to see further along the lines on how is this going to impact on the really the life of the project. I just want to focus on the main one, which we always have questions, and these are changes to the award. So I'm just going to try to fly through these. Yeah. Okay, so some changes on the end dates. This is one of the major ones. Probably it's about 40% of the of all the CFI sometimes are required. We have seen a drop on the end date because we have worked really closely on trying to forecast that they're not going to require an end date, really. But still, there are some projects that encounter problems with vendors or they have problem with the renovation. So really, this is normally one of the most popular changes with the CFI. Changes in the project leader, significant changes on the approved CFI. Changes on the equipment. This is the most common one. At the end of the project, we normally request the researchers to purchase what they said that they were going to purchase with their CFI approved equipment list. And then at the end, see the changes. Sometimes they have savings on pieces of equipment. So yes, they are entitled to go and ask if they can use those additional savings maybe to buy some accessories to existing pieces or actually to buy a new piece of equipment which is going to complement all the pieces that they have already asked for. Changes on the location, which is location, size, dollar amount of the renovations. I've seen somebody ask about if they went over budget or under budget. So large variances, not only by dollar value, but square footage, if they change room numbers, if there are major changes to really the renovation estimates, it has to be communicated to our office. And we will see if it's fit to bring it up to CFI's attention, or we'll can only just advise CFI at final financial report if this is that this has been changed. Changing the location, that's another thing that we go over on the revised budget and at the budget builder is the room location. Where is the piece of equipment located for the researcher? Is it going to be located in his lab? Is it going to be located in another area? Because right now we're trying to start, we have started this project about, it's an inventory of all the CFI pieces, and we are trying to track down where are the pieces located. This is not only going to help the researcher, new researchers, let's say that they're buying something or they're just including pieces that the lab already has. So this is really important for us at this stage. This is just the process on the change request. We ask the researcher to fill out a form. We send them to RFMS for internal review because when we're processing not only an end date or an equipment piece, we need to have the actuals on their financials. We need to know where the project stands and if he had purchased everything I don't think that we went into a lot of detail on what is, how is the equipment and the pieces, but sometimes we grouped items. So one, perhaps one line on the budget can have three different items. And it will depend on the project. That's why we need a final financial report. So the final review is done by our office, and we will send a request to CFI in Quebec. This request normally takes about maybe 2 weeks. Sometimes it's the day after. It will depend how. Sometimes it's even a communication, and we call CFI before if it's like it's a real rush. So it's really a close relation with our liaison at the granting agency. So this is just the form that we as a researcher for the end date. And there's all the questions that we ask the researcher on how to fill it out. The equipment list and why we focus on the equipment list when we're doing the changes, not only the equipment, but also the budget, what was written before. And this is the form for the equipment changes. This form will have, it's highlighted in red, and it will have the questions, the key questions that we want them to answer when we're filling out this form. Some of the changes that do not require CFI approval is when they're purchasing the same equipment but a different model, and if there's just a slight increase on the cash, maybe due to exchange rates, it's plus or minus. We normally do significant changes, plus or minus 10%. On the renovations, I think that we touch a lot of points on the renovations. So we reached to the IOF, and this is the operating monies. As Natalie mentioned, it's 30% on the most of the time, 40% of the CFI contribution. The distribution model that we use is based on the principle for allocation, the guiding and principle for allocation. It was done in the fall of 2008, and it applies to all the projects, even CRCs awarded after 2008. And researchers are eligible to receive these institutional monies if they have the needs, and their needs are fully justified. So we request the researchers, and I'm going here, to fill out this form. And this form is pretty much, we ask them what are going to be their type of expenditures on their operating grant. The way to allocate these monies, it will depend if it's a campus or hospital one, but on campus projects, it's 2% is given to the PI, and 1/3 is really retained centrally, and this is to create a reserve fund and to cover parts of the utilities on the project. For hospitals now, what we're doing is we made available to the hospitals their allocation so they can redistribute it on the best way for their researchers. Now the university does the reporting for the IOF, and it's for the full IOF. It's an institutional grant, so it's not done by researcher, it's done by the full university allocation. And as a note, we are actually reviewing the O&M policy. As part of the monitoring visit, the last monitoring visit in 2010, we were required to prepare an O&M budget. Now, the O&M budget is for operation and maintenance, and the IOF is a portion of this McGill O&M policy. So it's really have made the IOF and the way that we allocate these monies to the researchers maybe have a little twist or a little change. So we can see in the future some changes to this O&M policy and how this allocation to the researchers and central funding is being done. just to mention some of the, this is pretty much a detail on this form. And it's, if you see here, it's the project leader who signs this form as the chair. And we also require the VP approval because these are institutional monies. The researcher is given the two-thirds, but it doesn't mean that he's really going to use the full operating monies. And this will depend on the project. So it could happen that sometimes he requires less or more. It will depend on their needs, really. And that's what we assess here. Our office does a very, very thorough review. And any changes within these, it will have to be assessed by our office. Because when we're talking about warranties, we go back to the application. We go back also to what was written on the warranties. How many warranties, especially if it's a large piece of equipment, how are you going to cover your warranties for year three or four? So we really, as a researcher, and we try to push him to think about what's going to happen with their pieces of equipment within the five-year period, because we want him to have an operating lab until the end of his research project. So as I mentioned, while the CFI is active, we work closely with Post Award. We really monitor and ensure that the setup of the infrastructure grant and the fund is done in a timely manner. So we really push in to have finalizations done before the 9 months. And we communicate with research and restricted funds which ones are a rush to be open sometimes. If there's any type of pre-purchasing, to please collect all the documents. And it's a one-on-one basis with the researcher too. We really communicate. We have monthly meetings with RFMS on ongoing projects, things that they're foreseeing that they're coming down, and what could happen with if this vendor doesn't produce what he said. And for each specific project, we try to really assess what are going to be the problems and what's going to be upcoming. And we try to communicate these to CFI sometimes verbally. And also we control the progress reports. I have a few slides about the progress reports, and then I'll give the floor to Marilena. What is the progress report? So regardless of the financials, the financials and all the expenditures, the researcher still has to report to CFI on how's the project, how is the progress on the research. And really the purpose of these project progress reports is we really have two things. Is one for the PI, so he can measure their outcomes, and then if he wants to apply again to CFI, then we can have a backup on what has been their successes, what had been accomplished, how many trainees he had, everything about their project, and this is written on really the project progress report. And the other one is for our office, and it's about for CFI, sure. The other one is for our office, and we can measure the attraction and retention of researchers, the training of qualified personnel, the research productivity, if any type of partners, collaboration. It's really important for us, and we really do measure what are we doing wrong, how can we help our researchers, are they have all their operating monies, and this is that is a key element for us to try to modify some of our guidelines and try to really fulfill the need of our researchers. The project progress reports, is yearly, and normally it starts in April, but it's due in June. Normally it's Ada who sends an email to all the researchers, and this will come more or less hand in hand with the financial reporting. And that's why sometimes we try to match this the final financial reporting along with the progress report and try to address some of these issues. So it's really the ones that we flagged and we see that there are some problems. We try also to address these as comments on the final financial report. And I think that we have not had any comments in the past for the financials, which is a really improvement. So this is the reporting calendars. In March 2011, CFI changed a little bit the guidelines. And now it's projects over $1 million require five project progress reports. And they could start year three because it's all the time that it, and it will start the time that the researcher clicks on the CAMS system that the infrastructure is operational. In the past, right away after the award agreement was submitted, we were able to provide progress reports. But now these have changed. And then projects under $1 million, it starts year two. And it will also click after award finalization. And the researcher also has to click on if the infrastructure is operational. So now it's Marilena's turn.
Hi, everyone. So it comes the time that after the great effort in doing the finalization, after the long time that takes for the application, the fund can be finally opened. The researcher probably is already tired, but he is happy because he will be able to finally start purchasing. So the ISI office is sending us the package, the opening package, and it takes about 2-3 days, maybe maximum 5 days, to open the new CFI fund. After that, the fund administrator is inviting the PI to meet with us in order to discuss main issues about how he will operate the grant. We want to share with him or with her from our experience with CFI grants in order to avoid future problems. Usually we invite the PI to come with any person that will help him or her to manage the grant, to operate the grant. And this could be an FST, could be a research assistant, could be anyone that the PI is willing to bring. And most of the PIs come, I mean, they accept our invitation and they come to meet with us, and I think it's a very benefic meeting with them. For large scale projects, meaning over 1 million eventually, this kickoff meeting is initiated by the ISI office. Romina is inviting the PI, is inviting us, people from facilities, and from procurement. Because the complexity of the CFI funding is so big for these big projects that we need really to work with each other in order to make project come to a happy end. Romina spoke about pre-purchases. If there is any equipment already purchased and is sitting in another fund, when we meet with the PI, we ask him, give us a list of those expenses, and the fund administrator will transfer them to the CFI new open fund. And this transfer will be done by the fund administrator. We need, of course, to ask the PI to what line items belong those expenses, and with this, the information is complete. We will ask for the quotes eventually, but the transfers will be done. So, what are the duties of the fund administrator in our office? The fund administrator receives the approved award and other documents from the team of Nathalie Fassett. A new banner profile, meaning we set up the fund in banner according to the documents that we receive from Romina's office. And fund, of course, is set up for the whole budget, which means the McGill is extending to the PI a line of credit. It doesn't matter if at that point we didn't receive any money from CFI or any money from the provincial government. McGill is extending a line of credit for the full budget. We take care of the matching funds that are part of the 20% that Natalie explained about. We have to secure the matching funds before we allow the PI to spend. Why? Because many, many years ago, the matching funds were not secured at the beginning, and by the end of the project, the PI or the department who had to ensure the matching funds, they said, we don't have the money anymore. So now we take care that the matching funds are secured at the beginning, meaning if the matching funds are coming, for example, from the startup fund of the PI, we do the transfer right away at the beginning of the project. Many times this is not a pleasant thing that we ask the PI or the faculties, but it has to be done to ensure that he can spend at the maximum budget. So we transfer any pre-done purchases. We have a special team in our department. They are sending an opening memo to the PI. And also the next duties of the fund administrator are to be in touch with the office of Natalie and to handle the moving forward of the file. How many funds do we open for a CFI project? We open 5 funds. Only 1 fund is open for expenditures. There is only 1 fund that the PI will use to post the purchases into it. The other 4 funds are practically inexistent for the PI. They are open only for our internal purpose, and we open these 4 funds because we receive revenue from different sources, and we are not allowed to mix into 1 fund 2 types or more types of revenue. At the end of the project, when the final financial statement is done, we will transfer all the expenses from the expense fund into the revenue funds, and everything will be closed. We had in the past many questions regarding activity code versus account code. Many of you probably know what is a FOPAL, and you know that the activity code is the 5th sequence of the FOPAL. At the opposite, the account code is the 3rd sequence of the FOPAL. We are using for CFI projects the activity code because maybe you know other types of grants. When you post purchases to other types of grants, the activity code remains 000, 60s. Not for CFI. We are using the CFI activity codes in order to track expenses to the line items in the itemized list. I will give you an example, and very soon you will see also the CFI equipment list. For CFI, category number 13 is scientific equipment. In this category, the PI could purchase a few other equipments. Let's say there is a microscope that is on line number 3 under scientific equipment. As such, we will assign CFI activity code R13003, where 13 is the category of the expense and 3 is the line item number. All CFI purchases must have a CFI activity code. Any fund administrator will reject any purchase that doesn't have activity code, including P-card charges and fees. Even the fees are going into the fund without our approval, we will find them. So we will see them when we do financial reporting or even earlier, and we will go back to the person or even to the PI and ask them, please tell me to what line item pertains that fee. And if sometimes there are mistakes, they go wrongly into the fund, and in that case, of course, we transfer them out. Okay, so let's see how does it look, a CFI approved list We call it equipment list, but it's, the correct term is itemized list. So you can see category 13, purchase of equipment, has four lines. On each line, there is a title of the equipment. Then you have two columns of the budget, cash and in kind. And there it comes, of course, for financial reporting, we have the actual cost. The total budget is composed from cash and in kind. Probably you know, but I will repeat, in kind is not cash to be spent. In kind is only on paper, exists only on the quotes that we obtain from vendors. So the real cash that the PI can spend is the one on the cash column. Any questions? Okay. Let's speak a little more about the CFI in-kind discount, because usually we have questions about that. The first paragraph that you see on the screen is the actual definition of what is CFI in-kind contribution from the CFI guidelines. So, in-kind, in general terms, could be non-monetary or monetary, meaning cash contribution or discount from vendors. Now, speaking about real quotes from vendors, there are a few ways in which a vendor can show a discount. Many of them, they say discount. That is not good enough. We don't know if that discount is educational, special discount, CFI discount. So usually when a quote is not specific enough, we ask the PI to go back to the vendor and ask them to be more detailed. So when the vendor is writing CFI discount on the quote, it's all right. We can book the in-kind and everything is perfect. When the vendor says educational, that is not CFI discount. That is given to McGill University because it's an educational institution. That is not CFI in kind. Special discount could be considered CFI discount if eventually the vendor is giving us a notification saying we don't give educational discounts. In that case, the special discount will be considered CFI discount. And there are quotes in which the vendors specify both educational and CFI, and then we consider only the CFI part. No taxes are applied on CFI discounts because they are not monetary. The vendor must clearly write CFI discount. That is the best case. And as I said, we do not give educational discounts to clients. It's a very good confirmation from the vendor. Example of a CFI purchase with various discounts. The list price is the price to which the vendor is selling the equipment to anybody. I mean, not giving any preferential price. The list price is the maximum price of the equipment. Then the vendor could give a normal discount, which means they consider they can allow a little discount to any, almost any company or institution that is buying equipment from them. Then it comes the educational discount, and after all of this, there comes the fair market value. CFI introduced this term, and the fair market value is the list price minus the normal and educational discount. After that, the vendor could consider to give an additional discount to the PI who is purchasing only because he's purchasing for a CFI project. This is the CFI discount. After subtracting the CFI discount, we come to the net selling price. which is taxable. I want to stress that any quote that shows discount, when you order the equipment in Minerva Marketplace, you have to order at the net selling price after all discounts have been subtracted. Otherwise, we don't take advantage of the kindness of the vendor, and we come to a deficit in the end with the project. Just a little mention, in the financial statements, what we report is the CFI eligible cost, which is composed from the net selling price plus the in-kind contribution. Financial reporting that we do to CFI is always cumulative. We never do a financial report per one fiscal year. We always do it from the inception of the project until the cutoff date. PI is required to verify and sign any financial report. Of course, we know he has to sign it. We are not quite sure he is verifying it in detail, and he should. Maybe this is one point where he could ask for an FST help, because we are forwarding the financial report to the PI together with the list of expenses from ledger. Well, somebody has to look there and make sure that there is no wrong expense, like a wrong P-card charge. Anytime could be something wrong there because P-card charges are not approved by our administrators. So maybe another professor, another PI, has also a P-card, and by mistake, he changed a digit in the fund number, and the P-card charge went to the CFI project instead of another fund. That's why the verification of the PI of the department is required. The fiscal year is April 1st to March 31st for CFI, and the March 31st financial reports are always asking for a forecast for the next two fiscal years. Of course, the final report will be without forecast because the project is already finished. How often do we send financial reports to CFI? Every 2 years for projects less than 500,000. Every year, meaning every March 31st, for projects over 500,000. And quarterly or semi-annually for very large projects over $1 million. At the end of the project, there is a final report which is much more detailed than the other previous reports. This final report is due within 6 months after all purchases have been completed. Variances are the differences between the initial budget and the actual cost of the equipment. Variances are calculated to cash plus in kind. So we could have a big variance on a line item, but it really comes only from much more in kind obtained from the vendor. That is an easy one, and of course we will tell CFI that is coming only from in kind, and CFI will not have any complaints about that. However, we have to provide variance explanations for line items which incur total cost, cash plus in kind, over or under 5% of the total budget, or 50,000, whichever is lower. So the big surprise comes here that because many people think that we should only explain variances that are over the budget. No, we have to explain even ones that are under the budget. The PI has to explain why he spent such a low amount of money on an item that was much higher at the finalization stage. And depending on the case, the explanation could be more difficult or less difficult. At the end of the project, we also have to address unspent balances. They are usually returned to the funding institutions according to the 40-40-20 distribution. So if we have 1,000 unspent balance, we have to return 400 to CFI, 400 to MERS, and 200 to McGill, or whoever contributed the cash contribution. Of course, outstanding encumbrances must be cleared, meaning it shouldn't be any PO outstanding on the CFI fund. All the invoices should have been paid to the vendors. All the partners should have received the money. Any over expenditure must be cleared. That means the over expenditure has to be transferred to another fund. But there is a particular aspect about CFI funds. If you transfer a partial expense to another fund, that partial expense sitting in another fund has to be declared to CFI, because CFI only accepts in whole expenses, not partials. The good thing about that is that transferring a part of expense to another fund, that portion sitting in another fund will be considered cash contribution to the CFI project, if it's eligible, meaning that it has to be from a sponsor that is accepted by CFI. What kind of controls do we do over CFI projects? Our office, together with Natalie's office, we look at over expenditures, source of funding income, interinstitutional advances, payments, ineligible expenses are per CFI regulations, and hospital expenditures. It's very important to know that the researcher or somebody on behalf of the researcher can ask the fund administrator for an updated financial report at any given time of the project. The financial report is looking exactly like the itemized equipment list. And of course, you cannot find that report on the Minerva website together with other financial statements. It has a particular format, and the expenses are grouped by activity codes, so it's very particular. But in order to get an updated financial report, you only have to call or send an email to the fund administrator at any time, and they will do it. Last-minute purchases are very dangerous for the CFI project, especially when they are very close to the end of the project. They could lead to disallowances from CFI if the equipment is received after the end date of the project. It's not eligible anymore. The equipment is not working, so cannot be used for research. The item is defective. You can imagine if the PI is 1 month before the end date and he just received an equipment that is not functioning, what are the alternatives? Deal with the vendor to fix the equipment. They have to send it back and receive it back in order to be in function before the end of the project. Or sometimes the PI is not happy anymore with that vendor. They have to buy from another vendor an equipment that has the quality and the specifications that need to be so he can do the research. If he is only 1 month before the end of the project, there is a question of time when that fixing will happen. He might ask for a time extension, and CFI might approve it or not approve it. Just to mention, any post-award issues should be addressed with the fund administrator in RFMS or with Romina's office, and together we will try to solve the situation, or at least help the PI to solve the situation. To keep in mind, in-kind contributions are only reported when the PO is closed, so if the PO was just submitted, we cannot book in-kind. We can only book in-kind when the invoice or invoices were paid. The vendor must clearly write on the code CFI discount. And all financial reports and claims are prepared by CFI team in RFMS, by the fund administrators. The PI must review and sign the financial statement. For interinstitutional projects, when McGill is the lead, the PI at the partner institution have to sign the financial statement. Who has authorized financial signing authority is only our office. The grantee signing authority is only the PI. The final financial reports, we are giving to them a special attention because of the variances, explanations, and we work hand in hand with the ISI office. And I can tell you, since we do that for a few years, everything is much better on the CFI side. So, audits could come, yes.
Sorry,
yeah.
We're going to cover the auditing part of CFI in the audit session that's going to be coming in the fall. So, and the slides will still be posted.
Yeah.
So if you could just jump to your final slide, Marilena, because that's an important one.
Perfect.
Thank you.
Final slide. When happens the closure of the CFI project? When the project is complete, which means the renovation, if any renovation, is complete and the PI moved to the new space, all equipment has been purchased and it is up and running. We ask the PI to provide a confirmation by email that his equipment is running. All interinstitutional advances to partners are received and accounted for. All payments to vendors have been made. Outstanding commitments are cancelled. Outstanding travel advances are cancelled. All in-kind has been booked. And balance of the CFI expense fund is at zero. Final financial report is done and is signed and sent to CFI. And all the documents are in file, available for an eventual audit. An audit can happen anytime. And a little spreadsheet that shows you who you should contact. And the names of the people involved.
We apologize. We were a little bit over, but we're super happy with the presentation. Thank you so much for the speakers. I definitely learned a lot. I didn't know anything about CFI. Are there any last-minute questions that you would like to raise? Yes, we have one.
Is there an end date to the IOF? Does a researcher have only that 5 years?
Nathalie, you have to...
Well, normally the researchers have to use the IOF money for a period of 5 years. But when the rule for the CFI is there is no limit in time. So for the moment, we are not closing the fund as long as we see that the project is really using the money. We are starting question to the PI if we see that he is not using or slowly using the money when we know that other researchers are really starving.
And the 5 year that the lab has to stay intact, is that still a rule? Does that still have to happen?
The 5 years for?
The lab and the equipment staying where they are.
The 5 year is still a rule that we have to apply. The renovations, I mean, the CFI doesn't want to see that we are renovating space and 2 years after we change the usage of this room. So we still have to stick to validating that the space for 5 years is really kept for what it was initially intended for.
And when does that 5 years start?
It's at the completion of the renovations. Once the renovations are completed, then start the clock.
I see. Okay.
Yes. Even for the equipment, we just recently received, let's say, a trade-in for a piece of equipment. and the grant had been finalized, or like the final financial report was 2 years ago. So yes, we still have to ask for permission to CFI to change or to switch these pieces of equipment.
Okay. And you had mentioned that there's a joint CFI-CRC submission that goes in. Do the results of one drive the results of the other? Is it both or nothing?
If the CRC is not awarded, you never see if the CFI would have been successful. It's really the CRC must first be awarded. We have had one case where, because usually the CRC is awarded, then the CFI is awarded. They are jointly reviewed, so it's the same expert committee that is reviewing both. A proposal, but we have had one case where the CRC was awarded. So as the announcement of the CRC is done prior to the announcement of the CFI portion, we thought that it was a done deal, and it was not the case. They did not understand that it was for one major piece of equipment, and they did not understand why this researcher would need that functionality for the type of work she was doing, and this was refused, and it has been a surprise. So refusal of the CFI is possible, but if you don't have the CRC, forget about the CFI.
Okay. And what Rosemary had said before about the other federal or provincial funding for that 20%, if you go over that 20%, like that partial expense that Marilena was talking about, can that be other federal or provincial funding? If you go up to 21%.
It's Romina, you can answer better than me.
Yes, if you go over, if you have completed, now they have slightly changed that, and it could be some type of federal, only when you have completed your cash contribution.
Your 20%.
It's that over and above.
Okay. Okay, thank you.
Thank you all again. Remember the survey.